the Tutto Gusto Wine Cellar, which, as the name says, has the rustic look and feel of an Italian wine cellar. They carry over 200 bottles of Italian wines, plus beer, and a small plates menu of meats, cheeses, panini, pasta, and desserts. If you're interested in a more traditional Italian meal, Tutto Italia Ristorante serves lunch and dinner, offering chicken, fish, handmade pasta, and lasagna dishes. Authentic Italian dishes come from a menu created by award-winning chef and California restaurateur Joaquin Splitchell. The dining room features an old-world ambiance, with murals of ancient Rome throughout. Those two dining experiences are great, but if you're visiting the Italy Pavilion with me, we're going straight to Via Napoli. Seriously, the pizza is really good here. Not just good for Walt Disney World, but good in general. Specifically, the wood-fired margherita pizza. The Neapolitan pizzas served here use real Caputo flour imported from southern Italy, and the water used to make the dough has a similar profile to the water used in Italy's Campania region. The pizzas are baked in wood-fired ovens, which are a focal point of the restaurant. They are named after the three active volcanoes in Italy: Mount Etna, Mount Vesuvius, and Stromboli. The ovens reach temperatures up to 900 degrees and cook a pizza in roughly 2 minutes. As good as the food is here, so is the ambiance and decor. There are a few things to look out for when you enter the restaurant. As you approach the building, look on the exterior for a tile with the number 28 on it. The number represents the year Mickey Mouse made his debut, 1928. Once you're in the restaurant, look up and you'll see a beautiful glass chandelier with 1,200 pieces of glass fruit. Much of the decor seen throughout the restaurant has been imported from Italy, and so has the waitstaff. You can't miss the enormous table that seems as if it stretches on forever. If you have the opportunity, look for the hand-painted tiles featuring all the monuments found in Italy. The management of the restaurant go to Italy 4 times a year to recruit employees to work at the restaurant, truly giving it an authentic feel. On your way out of Italy, stop in at Enoteca Castello, Italy's wine shop. See if you can spot the hidden Mickey in the woodwork on the front wine counter. Moving right along, on October 3, 1978, the Orlando Sentinel published an article describing Disney's plans for Future World and the World Showcase. The World Showcase pavilions will feature the cultures, traditions, and accomplishments of sponsoring countries, including the Federal Republic of Germany, with traditional buildings, themed shops, and a German rivers ride. As the article stated, the original plan for Epcot's Germany pavilion included a Rhine River ride, which would feature a cruise down Germany's most famous rivers. There was even a building built for it, but the ride never came to fruition. While there's no show or movie at the pavilion, there is still much to see and appreciate here, most notably the design and architecture. The pavilion isn't based upon one specific region of the country, but borrows from several cities and time frames. The pavilion features designs from the 13th to the 17th centuries. The Platz, or plaza, here in Germany, almost has a whimsical feel of an alpine village, replete with castle designs from yesterday. Check the stair-step roofline, steeples, and turrets. The castle walls at the rear of the pavilion are an amalgamation of the Elz Castle, located between the cities of Koblenz and Trier, and Stahleck Castle, located in the upper middle Rhine Valley. Both of these castles date back to the 12th century, with the Elz Castle still owned by the same family, 33 generations later. If you're facing the pavilion and the World Showcase Lagoon is behind you, look to the right. You will see Das Kaufhaus. It's hard to miss the green awning for beer. This building is based on the Kaufhaus found in Freiburg, Germany, built during the 1500s. The version in Epcot has 3 figures adorning the building. Philip I, Charles V, and Ferdinand I were members of the royal family that ruled Austria-Hungary from 1273 to 1918. The actual building in Germany has four emperors on the outside. The three included here at Epcot, plus Maximilian I. The scale of the building in Florida wouldn't permit for all four to be included. Sorry, Max, you didn't make the cut. A trip to Germany wouldn't be complete unless you spent a little time at a beer garden. Epcot's version, the facade at least, is based on a beer garden in Rothenburg ob der Tauber, which is a town in the region of Bavaria known for its well-preserved medieval town. Here's a statistic you might not come across every day. The beer garden restaurant at Epcot serves up roughly 26.2 miles of bratwurst every 60 days, the length of a marathon. Just in front of the beer garden is a statue of St. George slaying a dragon. According to the Imagineering Field Guide to Epcot, St. George is the patron saint of soldiers. German legends say that St. George killed a dragon to which a king's daughter was being sacrificed, slaying it with his magical sword, Ascalon. Almost all German villages have a statue of St. George as a symbol of protection. Ours is modeled after the one in Rothenburg. Leaving Germany, we pass the outpost. It's not much of a traditional pavilion per se, but you can pick up a few hand-carved crafts or grab a quick drink or snack. Continuing around the World Showcase, you'll notice you're actually crossing a bridge to get to the China Pavilion. What you may not realize is this is a fully functioning drawbridge that is in use each and every day. If you happen to be in the World Showcase between 4 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll see the drawbridge go up and a large structure on a barge float on through to the World Showcase Lagoon. This is Disney making preparations for Epcot's evening entertainment, Illuminations, Reflections of Earth. Let's talk a bit about illuminations. At 9 o'clock each night at the World Showcase, Epcot gives guests a kiss goodnight with their 12-minute fireworks finale, celebrating Earth and the spirit of humanity. Flames, fountains, and fireworks that light up the skies and the World Showcase Lagoon are synchronized to a dramatic musical score. Leaping fountains of water, fire, and fireworks are choreographed to a symphonic score crafted by British television and motion picture composer Gavin Greenaway. The nightly spectacle, created by show director Don Dorsey, is the grand finale each day at Epcot. My goal was to remind people that our home planet is an amazing place, said Dorsey. This show weaves the story of our planet using mystical elements that signify unity and peace for all humankind. Reflections of Earth, like Epcot itself, is a celebration of our home planet, our humanity, and our potential. Illuminations is really something remarkable and a must-see. Here are a few facts and figures about the evening spectacle. The Earth globe is what requires the bridge to go up near the China Pavilion. It's where much of the magic comes from. The 28-foot diameter sphere is covered with video screens in the shape of the continents, all of which project vivid images that celebrate both human diversity and the unified spirit of humankind. The globe is the world's first spherical video display system. It's three stories tall and wrapped in more than 180,000 light-emitting diodes. The gigantic sphere rotates on a 350-ton floating island that houses six computer processors, 258 strobe lights, and an infrared guidance system. The 13-minute show requires 67 computers in 40 locations, hundreds of special lighting fixtures, four fountain barges pumping 5,000 gallons per minute, a 150,000-pound inferno barge with 37 nozzles shooting propane flames into the air, and lasers delivering a kaleidoscope of colors. 2,800 shells are exploded during the nightly display. Fireworks are launched from 750 mortar tubes and 56 firing modules at 34 locations. In the grand finale, the Earth globe opens up like a lotus flower as a giant fire torch emerges from the center and rises 40 feet into the air. 19 additional torches encircle the lagoon, along with more than 26,000 feet of lights, enough to stretch across the Golden Gate Bridge more than six times, that outline the World Showcase pavilions, all combined to make a spectacular finale. As we approach the China Pavilion, there's an interesting story within the story of the pavilion. Back on February 2, 1978, the headline of the front page of the Sentinel Star newspaper, which eventually merged with the Orlando Sentinel, read, "Taiwanese Reveal Epcot Plans." Here's what the article had to say. A delegation of Taiwanese trade representatives Wednesday told Florida officials in Tallahassee they plan to invest $10 million in Walt Disney World's Epcot. Jack Lindquist, Disney Marketing Vice President in charge of the Epcot project, said, "We're surprised and delighted to hear about the announcement." Lindquist said Disney officials had been negotiating with Taiwan for some time, but added the company had not yet received an official announcement that the country had decided to participate. He said Disney had hoped to identify all the participating countries at one time, but added he was not unhappy the visiting Taiwanese announced Taiwan's participation, if true. Another interesting quote from the story. "It caught us by surprise. We never announce anything like this," said Walt Disney Vice President C. Langhorn Washburn, who runs Disney's Washington, D.C. World Showcase office. "It's true that the ambassador of Taiwan informed me the government has decided in principle to be a participant," he said. "An agreement in principle is an expression of intent to go ahead with a deal. It is not binding, but is intended to lead to a binding commitment or definitive agreement. Now," Washburn said, "we will enter a preliminary design stage, which will take another 6 to 9 months. Only after completing that design will we be able to give the size, shape, and concept for the Taiwanese pavilion we will present to the world. We don't like to announce any agreements in principle. We like to announce fait accompli." It sounds a bit as if Taiwan blindsided Disney with the announcement. And, as Mr. Washburn indicated, despite Taiwan's announcement, the agreement wasn't binding, and a lot can happen in the planning stages, which is exactly what took place. Taiwan and China, and then by default, the United States of America, have had a complicated relationship over the decades. Here's a little background from the Council on Foreign Relations. Taiwan, home to 23 million people, is an island off the southern coast of China that has been governed independently from mainland China since 1949. The People's Republic of China, PRC, views the island as a province, while in Taiwan, a territory with its own democratically elected government, leading political voices have differing views on the island's status and relations with the mainland. Some observe the principle that there is one China comprising the island and the mainland, but in their eyes, this is the Republic of China, ROC, based in Taipei. Others advocate for a de jure independent Taiwan. China and Taiwan maintain a fragile relationship. Beijing and Taipei sharply disagree on the island's status. The PRC asserts that there is only one China, and that Taiwan is an inalienable part of it. In 1979, the United States established formal diplomatic relations with Beijing by concluding a joint communique stating that the United States of America acknowledges the Chinese position that there is but one China and Taiwan is part of China. At that time, U.S. President Jimmy Carter terminated diplomatic relations with the ROC government in Taiwan. What does this have to do with Epcot? If you think back to Taiwan's Epcot announcement, that was in February 1978. Months later, in 1979, President Carter ended diplomatic relations with the government of Taiwan, in essence, putting an end to a Taiwan pavilion in the World Showcase. Fast forward to January 25, 1980. Card Walker, then president of Walt Disney Productions, told the Dow Jones News Service, I've been in contact with top Chinese officials, and I'm optimistic that we will have China in a later phase of our project. As we see today, the China Pavilion is represented at Epcot and was an opening day member of the World Showcase. But Taiwan had a little bit more to say on their Disney debacle. In 1983, Taiwan tried to work their way into the showcase again, in a rather creative fashion. Apparently, the city of Orlando and the city of Tainan in Taiwan are sister cities. And what do sister cities do for each other? Exchange gifts. Quoting from the May 12, 1983 edition of the Orlando Sentinel, Walt Disney World won't display the mammoth 25,000-pound hunk of marble sent to Orlando by its sister city in Taiwan 3 weeks ago, as the donors had requested. The rock was meant as a gift to the city of Orlando, Disney spokesman Bob Mervine said Wednesday. We're not the city of Orlando. We don't feel it is appropriate to display it at all at Walt Disney World. Local observers and international experts had suggested that accepting the 12.5-ton stone from Tainan, Taiwan, would present Disney with a heavyweight problem of international protocol. The World Showcase at Disney's Epcot Center is already home to an exhibit sanctioned by Taiwan's bitter rival, the People's Republic of China. But Mervine denied that political considerations played any part in the decision, which was made by corporate vice presidents on the Walt Disney World Operating Committee. We do try to stay away from the political thing at the World Showcase, where exhibits on the culture and heritage of 9 countries are displayed, Mervine said. But in this case, politics had nothing to do with it. Orlando officials at first believed Disney would heed the request, which is inscribed in a gold-lettered black marble plaque accompanying the stone. It asks the stone be placed at a permanent location in your great Walt Disney World. The rock, which resembles a gnarled tree trunk, is adorned with 2 gold symbols representing love of country and love of family. The stone was taken from a 5,000-foot-high mountaintop in eastern Taiwan and measures 19.5 feet long, 5 feet wide, and nearly 4 feet high, and weighs roughly 25,000 pounds. Although he did not know about the gift in advance, T.H. Lin of Taiwan's Coordinated Council for North American Affairs said he guessed that the stone was designed to give Taiwan a presence at Epcot, which is visited by about 10,000 Taiwanese a year. Ultimately, Disney tried to avoid an international political incident here by not only refusing the gift from Taiwan, but not including the country in the World Showcase. Little did Disney know at the time, having a China pavilion in Epcot was catching the attention of the U.S. government, specifically the FBI. The Tampa Bureau of the Federal Bureau of Investigation was worried about the communist influence and possible terrorism or spies lurking at the pavilion being staffed by Chinese nationals. The documents pertaining to the FBI's concern were requested and released via the Freedom of Information Act and posted on the website Muckrock, www.muckrock.com. Real-world politics intersects the fantasy world of a theme park. You can't make this stuff up. Despite the covert FBI program, political turmoil, unauthorized announcements, and backdoor gifts, the path to the China Pavilion is still going strong at Epcot, and it's one of the most beautiful pavilions in the World Showcase, which is fitting for one of the world's oldest civilizations. Entering the pavilion, guests walk under the Zhao Yang Men, which translates into Gate of the Golden Sun. This gate was modeled after the main gate at the Emperor's Beijing Summer Palace. Just past the gate and at the back of the pavilion is the Temple of Heaven, which is based upon the Hall of Prayer for Good Harvest in the Temple of Heaven, constructed in China during the early 1400s. As the name suggests, the emperor would pray here for a bountiful harvest. The building's intricate design and architecture are highly immersive. Imagineers spent countless hours screen printing detailed patterns onto every tile you see on the exterior of the building in an effort to clone the intricate patterns on the original building in China. Inside the hall, there are four columns in the center that represent the four seasons. The 12 outer columns are indicative of the 12 months of the year. As the Imagineering Field Guide to Epcot explains, in Chinese design, circles define the heavens and squares stand in for the earth. Used together, they form the universe. This motif repeats itself throughout the building. The red and yellow that are found all around represent happiness and the emperor, respectively. The medallion inset into the top of the prayer hall is an important symbol for the building and is representative of the Chinese culture. The dragon and the phoenix each carry meaning. The dragon is indicative of power, and if it has five claws, it specifically refers to the power of the emperor. And the phoenix represents peace and prosperity. Together, they signify a marriage. The acoustics are very interesting here. When standing directly under the dome, clap your hands and listen. Obviously, the attraction at this pavilion goes beyond hand clapping and is more focused on the remarkable designs in this tranquil setting. Inside the hall is the 14-minute, 360-degree circle vision film, Reflections of China. The film plays all day and takes you on a journey of sight and sound through ancient and modern China. A Disney crew carried a 300-pound camera up 4,500 steps of the Huangkan Mountain in the Anhui province to shoot scenes for the film. Talk about dedication. Imagineers specifically designed the exit corridor for Reflections of China a little tighter and smaller than they normally would for an attraction exit. This was done to replicate the cramped feeling on the busy streets of China. The years before and after Epcot opened, rumors flew, announcements were made, and even signs went up welcoming new countries to Epcot: Spain, Russia, Israel, Costa Rica, and Venezuela were all mentioned. Even today, the rumors and chatter still persist. But in the summer of 1985, the Parliament of Norway and a handful of private corporations from the country came together and signed a deal with Disney to bring a Norway pavilion to the World Showcase. The Norway pavilion debuted in the summer of 1988 and features the ambiance of a Norwegian village showcasing a medieval castle named Askershus. The design for the castle comes from a 14th century Norwegian castle with the same name in Oslo. Epcot's Askershus offers storybook dining and the opportunity to feast with Snow White, Cinderella, Belle, Princess Aurora, and Ariel. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner are offered. Definitely make reservations if you plan to dine with these ladies. The other landmark in the 58,000-square-foot pavilion is the Stave Church, or Stavkirk. According to the Official Tourism Board of Norway, stave churches are considered to be among the most important examples of wooden medieval architecture in Europe. In the Middle Ages, there were probably more than 1,000 stave churches in Norway. Today, only 28 remain. A stave church is made of wood, and the construction is made out of poles, staver in Norwegian, hence the name. Most of the remaining stave churches in Norway were built between 1150 and 1350. In the Middle Ages, there were similar types of churches all over northwestern Europe. In Norway, there was a tradition for using wood in artwork as well as in construction, and this leads to the development of a unique technique that the stave churches are a perfect example of. The decoration features a unique mix of both Christian and Viking symbolism. So clearly, the stave church is on the endangered species list of culturally significant and historical buildings. Lucky for us, we have a great replica here in Central Florida. Disney's Imagineers traveled extensively through Norway to research architecture and decor. And what they brought back were the characteristics and styles of the towns Bergen, Ålesund, Oslo, and set a stall. The big attraction in the Norway Pavilion is the boat ride, Frozen Ever After. Go ahead, put the book down, and go make your FastPass reservation for the ride. More often than not, you will be facing a long line if you plan to ride via standby. When the Norway Pavilion debuted, it featured a 10-minute boat ride called Maelstrom. But with the runaway success of the movie Frozen, Maelstrom and its trolls were bumped for Anna and Elsa in June 2016. The boat journey through Arendelle uses a similar track layout to Maelstrom, but that's about all that resembles the Norway boat ride of yesterday. Today, this family-friendly adventure in the Norway Pavilion picks up after the events of the movie left off. The attraction celebrates a summer snow day as you see the kingdom of Arendelle and visit with Queen Elsa, Princess Anna, Kristoff, and Olaf. All the actors who voiced the characters in the hit movie recorded dialogue and songs for the attraction. After disembarking, guests can top off their Frozen experience by meeting the royal sisters in their new Royal Summer Hosts greeting location. Inspired by a Norwegian countryside cabin, Anna and Elsa have opened their summer home for visitors. Again, Walt Disney Imagineers traveled to Norway for architecture and design research, specifically visiting the Detli House in Sverresborg and the Open-Air Museum of Cultural History in Trondheim to perfect their piece of Norway in Florida. Only the magic of Disney can bring you the country of Mexico next to the country of Norway. Our last country in the World Showcase is the United States neighbor to the south. Throughout the 85,000-square-foot pavilion, the pre-Columbian culture and architecture of Mesoamerica is showcased, with different aspects of the Toltec, Mayan, and Aztec civilizations being well represented here. At one point during the early design phase of the pavilion, Disney consulted with the ambassador to Mexico, who pointed out that their designs might be leaning too much toward a Spanish colonial influence, so they changed the design to what you see here today. Disney really captured the spirit of the Mexican culture from yesterday, with not one, but two pyramids. The 36-foot-tall pyramid outside is an amalgamation of Mesoamerican motifs, concentrating heavily on Aztec design, with its 5-tiered sloping walls 50 steps high. There's even a spot at the top of the pyramid that helps coordinate components of illuminations each night. Inside the pavilion, it's perpetually nighttime as you stroll the Plaza de los Amigos. A second pyramid, a bit weathered-looking, looms over the plaza and the San Angel Inn. This restaurant replicates the popular Mexico City restaurant of the same name and ownership, which has played host to such famous Mexican figures as General Santa Anna and Pancho Villa and was built in 1692. The major attraction at the Mexico Pavilion is the Gran Fiesta Tour starring the Three Caballeros, an 8.5-minute boat trip showcasing the people, history, culture, and arts of Mexico. During the experience, guests catch a glimpse of some of Mexico's favorite locales and are amused by both live-action footage around Mexico and the animated adventures of Panchito, the Mexican charro rooster, Jose Carioca, the Brazilian parrot, and Donald Duck. The attraction is inspired by the 1944 Disney film The Three Caballeros. The animated sequences for the ride were done by Eric Goldberg, who animated Genie in the film Aladdin. There are quite a few hidden Mickeys lurking throughout the Gran Fiesta Tour. As you're cruising along and come across the scene where Donald Duck is parasailing, look for a dark tree in front of the buildings along the shoreline. You will see a dark hidden Mickey all the way off to the right. About halfway through the ride, if you look to your left, you'll see that Donald takes a dip in the lagoon and an octopus pops up, as do a variety of bubbles. Spot the bubbles above the octopus and to the left that are shaped like a traditional Mickey head. Toward the end of the ride, there's a room with fiber-optic fireworks on the ceiling. Some of these form a classic Hidden Mickey. As you enter this room, there's a barge on the left side that has the words, Viva Donald. In the right corner are three drums that form a Hidden Mickey. That last Hidden Mickey brings us to the end of the Mexico Pavilion and wraps up the World Showcase and Epcot. As you walk out of the pavilion, make a right and start walking to the Mexico Pavilion boat launch, just before the Disney Traders building. We need to get back across to the other side of the World Showcase, and rather than walk it, we will take this boat to the other side of the lagoon. When the park originally opened, you could actually hop aboard a double-decker bus and be carted around the countries. But for now, if you don't feel like walking, it will have to be a boat. The boat won't actually save you a ton of time, but it's scenic and can get you off your feet. Once you're across to the other side of the lagoon, walk over toward France, cross the bridge, and make a left to the International Gateway. Just after you exit the park, on the left is another boat dock. Here, another friendship boat will take you to Disney's Hollywood Studios, our next destination. As mentioned earlier in the chapter, you can also walk there if you're so inclined. Before you board any attraction, check the signs for warnings regarding heart, back, blood pressure, and neck issues, along with risks to riding while pregnant. The following descriptions and blurbs come from the Walt Disney World Resort website. Future World. Bruce's Shark World. Interactive Exhibit. Future World. The Seas with Nemo and Friends. The Circle of Life. A 20-minute widescreen film about conservation with color commentary from the stars of Walt Disney's The Lion King. Land Pavilion. Disney and Pixar Short Film Festival. Disney and Pixar short films in 4D. Experience popular Disney and Pixar short films like never before, in 4D, for the first time ever. ImageWorks, the What If Labs. Explore this interactive play area after you journey into imagination with Figment, where little ones can explore and create. Innoventions. Interactive exhibits. Journey into imagination with Figment. Figment, the playful purple dragon, is your guide on this whimsical ride through the Imagination Institute. Journey into Imagination Pavilion. Living with the Land. Sail through the greenhouses of the Land Pavilion on a boat tour and behold 9-pound lemons, Mickey-shaped pumpkins, and more. Relaunched Mission Space. Experience authentic NASA-style training on a thrilling ride to Mars or orbit around Earth during an all-new family-friendly mission. Seabase. Immerse yourself in the magic of life under the sea at this ocean-themed destination, home to an aquarium and a flood of exhibits. Future World. The Seas with Nemo and Friends. The Seas with Nemo and Friends. Go under the sea without getting wet on this attraction based on Disney Pixar's Finding Nemo, which finds Nemo lost again. The Seas with Nemo and Friends. Soarin'. Take flight on a breezy, airborne adventure as you hang glide above some of the most breathtaking wonders the world has to offer. Land Pavilion. Spaceship Earth. Travel in time and explore the history of communication on a ride that takes you from the Stone Age to the Computer Age. Test Track. Design a virtual concept vehicle and then go for a high-octane spin at this attraction that's thrilling and creative. Turtle Talk with Crush. Gather round a window to the ocean for a real-time Q&A session with your favorite totally tubular turtle, Righteous. World Showcase. The American Adventure. Audio animatronics, film, and music bring America's past to life during this 30-minute show at the American Adventure Pavilion. Frozen Ever After. Hoist the sails in Arendelle aboard an ancient Norwegian vessel as you set out into the wondrous, wintry world of Frozen. Gran Fiesta Tour, starring the Three Caballeros. Take in the sights of Mexico and the antics of the three feathered amigos on this gentle boat ride through the Mexico Pavilion. Impressions de France. Enjoy this 18-minute film showcasing the grandeur, charm, and romance of one of Europe's most enchanting countries. Kid Caught Fun Stops. Collect stamps and create a personalized souvenir at any or all 11 of these World Showcase craft stations. Oh, Canada. Tuck away inside the Canada Pavilion for a 14-minute Circle Vision 360-degree film showcasing our neighbor to the north. Reflections of China. Journey through ancient and modern China while watching this 14-minute Circle Vision 360-degree film, screening in the China Pavilion. Future World Restaurants. Coral Reef Restaurant, The Seas with Nemo and Friends, American Cuisine, Table Service. Electric Umbrella, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Fountain View, American Bakery, Quick Service. The Garden Grill, Land Pavilion, American Cuisine, Table Service. Sunshine Seasons, Land Pavilion, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Taste Track, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Test Track Cool Wash, American Cuisine, Quick Service. World Showcase Restaurants. Oscarshus Royal Banquet Hall, Norway Pavilion, American Norwegian Cuisine, Table Service. Beer Garden Restaurant, German Pavilion, German Cuisine, Table Service. Block and Hans, German Pavilion, American Cuisine. Chefs de France, France Pavilion, French Cuisine, Table Service. Crepes de Chefs de France, France Pavilion, French Cuisine, Quick Service. Fife and Drum Tavern, American Adventure Pavilion, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Joy of Teas, China, Chinese Cuisine, Quick Service. Kabuki Cafe, Japan, Multiple Cuisines, Quick Service. Katsura Grill, Japan, Multiple Cuisines, Quick Service. Kringla Bakery Og Cafe, Norway Pavilion, Norwegian Cuisine, Quick Service. La Cantina de San Angel, Mexico Pavilion, Mexican Cuisine, Quick Service. La Cava del Tequila, Mexico Pavilion, Mexican Cuisine, Quick Service. La Hacienda de San Angel, Mexico Pavilion, Mexican Cuisine, Table Service. La Artisan des Glaces, France Pavilion, American French Cuisines, Quick Service. Le Cellier Steakhouse, Canada Pavilion, American Steakhouse, Table Service. Le Halles Boulangerie Patisserie, France Pavilion, French Bakery, Quick Service. Le Vins de Chefs de France, France Pavilion, French Cuisine, Quick Service. Liberty Inn, American Adventure Pavilion, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Lotus Blossom Cafe, China Pavilion, Chinese Asian Cuisines, Quick Service. Monsieur Paul, France Pavilion, French Cuisine, Table Service, Fine Dining. Nine Dragons Restaurant, China Pavilion, Chinese Asian Cuisine, Table Service. Refreshment Cool Outpost, The Outpost, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Refreshment Port, American Cuisine, Quick Service. Restaurant Marrakesh, Morocco Pavilion, Moroccan Mediterranean Cuisine, Table Service. Rose and Crown Pub and Dining Room, United Kingdom Pavilion, British Cuisine, Table Service. San Angel Inn Restaurante, Mexico Pavilion, Mexican Cuisine, Table Service. Sommerfest, Germany Pavilion, German Cuisine, Quick Service. Spice Road Table, Morocco Pavilion, Mediterranean Cuisine, Table Service. Tangerine Cafe, Morocco Pavilion, Moroccan Mediterranean Cuisine, Quick Service. Teppan Edo, Japan Pavilion, Japanese Asian Cuisine, Table Service. Tutto Gusto Wine Cellar, Italy Pavilion, Italian Cuisine, Table Service, Tutto Italia Ristorante, Italy Pavilion, Italian Cuisine, Table Service, Via Napoli Ristorante e Pizzeria, Italy Pavilion, Italian Cuisine, Table Service, Yorkshire County Fish Shop, United Kingdom Pavilion, American British Cuisine, Table Service, Entertainment. Meet a few characters. Be sure to check the times for the meetings once you're in the park or via the My Disney Experience app. Disney Visa card member character experience at Epcot, Future World. Meet Anna and Elsa at Royal Summer House, World Showcase, Norway. Meet a wonderful friend in the United Kingdom, World Showcase, United Kingdom. Meet Baymax at Heroes Workshop, Future World. Meet Belle in France, World Showcase, France. Meet Disney Pals at Legacy Plaza West, Legacy Plaza. Meet Disney Pals at the Epcot Character Spot, Future World. Meet Donald Duck in Mexico, World Showcase, Mexico. Meet Joy and Sadness at Headquarters, Future World. Meet Mary Poppins in the United Kingdom, World Showcase, United Kingdom. Meet Mulan in China, World Showcase, China. Meet Princess Jasmine in Morocco, World Showcase, Morocco. Meet Snow White in Germany, World Showcase, Germany. Live music and shows. British Revolution, World Showcase, United Kingdom. Illuminations, Reflections of Earth, World Showcase Lagoon. Jamators at Future World East, Future World. Jewel Dragon Acrobats, World Showcase, China. Mariachi Cobre, World Showcase, Mexico. Matsuriza, World Showcase, Japan. Quickstep, World Showcase, United Kingdom. Voices of Liberty, World Showcase, American Adventure. Chapter 3. Disney's Hollywood Studios. Under construction. Fantasy, if it's really convincing, can't become dated for the simple reason that it represents a flight into a dimension that lies beyond the reach of time. Walt Disney. Throughout the Disney theme parks, thousands of different colors are omnipresent. During the design phase, the Imagineers pay close attention to the various shades of each color and the relationships between them. As John Hench is quoted in his book, Designing Disney, "Like music, color is one of the great joys of life, mysterious and wonderful. We know that color is a direct experience. People see color, and they feel color's emotional effects. Color brings the Disney parks alive with drama, romance, and playfulness. Well-chosen color draws guests in. It catches the eye and directs and focuses attention." We've talked a lot about John. If you're interested, the appendix of the book has his bio. Colors may also be used to avert your attention or camouflage certain things. In these situations, Disney is an expert here, too. As you stroll through any of the Disney parks, there are plenty of things within the park that are necessary components of the Disney experience, but Disney hopes you don't notice them. Items such as administrative offices, back or side portions of show buildings, fences, handrails, dumpsters, light posts, things under construction. The list could go on and on. Many of these items are painted a specific color in an effort to make them blend in with the landscaping or to help disguise them in plain sight. This color, or actually colors, as there are many different shades of it, is known throughout the Disney company as no-see green, or no-see-em green, or go-away green. It's a neutral shade that your eyes seem to just glance right over. As former Imagineer Tom Morris informed me, my impression is that John Hench spec'd the Disney version of the color, and there are variants of it, starting around the same time that the show buildings for Pirates and Small World were going up at DL. Pirates, meaning Pirates of the Caribbean, and DL, meaning Disneyland. So why all this talk of color? Well, as of late 2017, Disney's Hollywood Studios could use a big coat of no-see green, as the park is in the midst of a monumental change. Perhaps a better term would be that it's stuck in an identity crisis, or again, maybe an even better term would just be under construction. Before we can tackle what is remaining today at the park, perhaps we should go over what it was and what it will be. On July 8, 1985, Michael Eisner, then president of Disney, and Florida Governor Bob Graham held a press conference in Tallahassee announcing the plans for Disney MGM Studios. At that time, Eisner had been at the helm of Disney for roughly a year. When he joined the company in 1984, one of his early thoughts was to add on to Epcot Center. Eisner envisioned an entertainment-themed pavilion for Epcot's future world. Keep in mind, Epcot was only about 2 years old then. But as thoughts and ideas started to come together, and more minds got involved, the pavilion seemed to grow and become a bit more ambitious. The notion of a pavilion evolved into an entire theme park experience. In actuality, this whole concept of an interactive Disney studio for guests to visit actually dates back even further than Michael Eisner and started with Walt. Going back decades, folks have been able to tour Universal Studios in Hollywood, California, and Walt knew fans wanted to see his operation as well. During the heyday of Disney animation, the studio was inundated with letters asking for tours and details about the comings and goings of the studio. There's even a cute Disney movie from 1941, The Reluctant Dragon, which is essentially a tour of the Disney studios. Walt first considered a park on his own back lot. Land issues combined with potential traffic problems caused him to look elsewhere, namely Anaheim. As is often the case with dreams and plans, things grew and evolved into what we know today as Disneyland. If we fast forward a few decades, everything came full circle for Disney in Florida. With plenty of land to work with, the company combined production facilities with theme park attractions to give Disney guests a behind-the-scenes Hollywood experience. As Michael Eisner declared on opening day of the park, May 1, 1989, Disney MGM Studios was the Hollywood that never was and always will be. The park was designed to provide guests a little taste of Hollywood in Central Florida, immersing visitors into the glitz and glamour of show business. The park would feature the usual Disney theme park, attractions, and shows, but visitors would also have the opportunity to see actual television and film production on site. Early on in the life of Disney MGM Studios, television and movie production actually happened. Ed McMahon's Star Search, Wheel of Fortune, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, Quick Change, Passenger 57, The Mickey Mouse Club, and a few other movies and television programs were filmed there. Through the mid to late 1990s and early 2000s, things started to change at the park. The experience was less and less about the actual filming or production of big screen or small screen entertainment, and its identity started to differ from opening day. In fact, in 2008, the park went through a name change. The MGM was dropped. When Disney first opened the park, they were interested in the content and licensing of MGM Studios, so the two studios partnered up in Florida. Today, it's known as Disney's Hollywood Studios. Nearly a decade after the first name change, it appears the theme park is set for another one and a shift in identity. Plenty of rumors are circulating about a pending name change and a possible shift. The announcement and construction of Star Wars Land and Toy Story Land, and the closure of most of the original attractions featured within the park. There's even a chance that as you're reading this, the name change has already been announced, are laying the foundation for a Hollywood Studios 2.0. As we've seen throughout the book, just because Disney announces something doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen or happen exactly as described. So, with that being said, Again, I hesitate to go into detail about what is coming down the pike. This much is known. Much of Toy Story Land is set to debut in the summer of 2018, and Star Wars Land is on the horizon for 2019. Despite the current changes and ongoing construction, and while there aren't a ton of attractions to enjoy, there are still some interesting sights, secrets, and stories lingering around Disney's version of the Hollywood of yesterday. I'm not going to hold a memorial and dwell too much on the attractions that are now gone, but I will focus primarily on what you can still see and experience today. So, let's enter the park. If you're a native of Los Angeles and over the age of 35, the facade of Disney's Hollywood Studios may look familiar to you. And no, it's not because you can find a similar facade at Disney's California Adventure Park. The entry is based on the Pan Pacific Auditorium, which was a landmark location in Los Angeles from 1935 to 1989. The Pan Pacific Auditorium featured an architectural style called Streamline Modern. This style didn't last very long, but was prominent during the late 1930s and the 1940s. During its heyday, the auditorium hosted sporting events, car shows, the circus, concerts. In October 1957, the King of Rock and Roll, Elvis, played a marathon set featuring 19 songs and political events. In late May 1989, the Pan Pacific Auditorium burned down. It was built out of wood. In an odd coincidence, the fire happened just a few weeks after Disney's Hollywood Studios debuted. Since the auditorium is now gone, Disney has preserved a sliver of the unique design and history of yesterday's Los Angeles. Another landmark not too far from where the Pan Pacific Auditorium stood is the Crossroads of the World. Built a year after the auditorium, in 1936, this iconic piece was a focal point of what has been called America's first outdoor shopping mall. Today, it primarily houses offices. While the actual Crossroads of the World is located at 6671 Sunset Boulevard, here at Disney, the recreation welcomes you onto Hollywood Boulevard. Hooray for Hollywood! Disney's version of Hollywood Boulevard is similar to Main Street in the Magic Kingdom. It greets guests and transports them to another time and place. In this case, it's Tinseltown during its golden age. The first building on the left side, just past the Crossroads of the World, is Mickey's of Hollywood. You may notice an adjacent sign that says Pluto's Toy Palace. This facade and sign were inspired by a former veterinarian's office, the Dog and Cat Hospital, 940 North Highland Avenue, in Hollywood. Across the street from Pluto's Toy Palace is Adrian and Edith's Head to Toe. This facade is based on the Chapman Park Market Building on 6th Street in Los Angeles. The names Adrian and Edith are a reference to two very accomplished costume designers, one of whom, Edith Head, received 8 Academy Awards for her work in costuming. Both women could dress you from head to toe. According to the Los Angeles Conservatory website, opened in 1929, the drive-in Chapman Park Market was one of the first markets in the western U.S. designed for the automobile. The market presented a fortress-like facade with thick concrete walls worked to resemble sandstone and ornate, Shurigi-esque towers on the corners. A large rooftop sign invited motorists off Wilshire. Patrons drove in through a Spanish Revival archway to find an inner courtyard surrounded by various grocers. Adrian and Edith's brings us toward the end of the block. Making a right turn will take you down Sunset Boulevard. This area of the park didn't exist when Hollywood Studios debuted and was added in 1994. As you turn right down Sunset Boulevard, gear up for some excitement, because at the moment, about half of the park's rides are right here, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror and Rockin' Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith. Before we get there, let's slow down a bit and take in a few sights. As you stroll along the sidewalks, look for a concrete stamp around Hollywood and Sunset. Mortimer & Company Contractors, 1928. Mortimer is a reference to the original proposed name for Mickey Mouse. The first shop on the right side of the block is Legends of Hollywood. The exterior architecture features the streamlined modern style, as seen at the entrance to the park. The building itself is inspired by the 1938 Academy Theater in Inglewood, California. The next block down on the same side of the street is the store Sunset Club Couture. Check out the upper-level windows, which feature the dog from the 2008 movie Bolt. Another window says, "Director's Best Friend," a wink and a nod to the Disney movie. At the end of the block, and a store down from Sunset Club Couture, is the shop Once Upon a Time. This building is a replica of the Spanish Revival-style Carthay Circle Theater in Beverly Hills. The theater was built in 1926 and demolished in 1969 at 6316 San Vicente Boulevard. For those familiar with Disney movie history, the Carthay Circle was the location of the world premiere of Snow White in 1937. If you go in and check out the store, there's a photo from the big night back on December 21st, 1937. If you listen closely, you'll hear a radio broadcast of the premiere. Across from Once Upon a Time is the Sunset Ranch Market, which is inspired by the still-standing 1934 Farmers Market on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Fairfax in L.A. Just next to the Sunset Ranch Market is Rosie's All-American Cafe. The Rosie inspiring the name of the cafe is the cultural icon Rosie the Riveter. Rosie was representative of the hard-working women who worked tirelessly in factories and shipyards during World War II. Now it's time for thrills and chills. At the end of Sunset Boulevard are the two big-name attractions featured at the park. First up, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror is based on the popular television series, which originally aired from 1959 to 1964. Created, hosted, and written by Rod Serling, the award-winning show was wildly successful in its day and still lives on today as a classic television series. Disney adapted and tweaked the premise of the series into a thrill ride. From the Walt Disney World website, classic stars of the silver screen sought rest and relaxation at the Hollywood Tower Hotel during the golden age of Hollywood. In 1939, during a gloomy Halloween night, five unfortunate hotel patrons were riding in the elevator when a violent storm struck the building, and they were never seen again. Whatever became of them, and wherever they may have gone, has remained a mystery to this day. The hotel closed down that night and has remained abandoned ever since. You're invited to take a tour of the Hollywood Tower Hotel and experience an unforgettable ride on a stormy night very similar to the evening when the unexplained event occurred. Be welcomed by Rod Serling as you journey to the fifth dimension. Well, the funny thing about this attraction is not only have the five unfortunate hotel patrons been lost, but so has that episode of the television show. As Michael Sprout, a show writer, is quoted in Walt Disney Imagineering, "A lot of people have told me they don't remember a Twilight Zone episode about an elevator. And they're right. This is the lost episode no one has ever seen." In preparation for writing the storyline, Imagineers watched 156 episodes of The Twilight Zone for inspiration, so I'm pretty sure they would know if one of the episodes is missing. However, in typical Disney fashion, the research and development for the attraction went above and beyond merely watching television and dreaming up an ordinary free-fall ride. Originally, Michael Eisner envisioned the concept for this ride to take place in an actual hotel, with the ride dropping into the middle of a working hotel lobby. Eisner claims this idea was abandoned for reasons of cost and practicality. With the working hotel concept put to rest, Disney visited with Otis Elevator. In 1852, Elisha Otis invented the safety elevator, which automatically comes to a halt if the hoisting rope breaks. to research their idea of a runaway elevator. What they experienced during this meeting was not what they expected. Otis invited the team to visit a high-rise building in Los Angeles, where they had just completed installation of their fastest generation elevator. The team was anxious to give it a try since, above all, the ride had to be fast. Dropping from the 50th floor, even after Otis had adjusted